Accession number 14157, reel 4.
Commander Corkill, reel 4.
We were lent to RAF Coast Command for, I'm sorry, it was 4 very happy months. They were very happy months for the simple reason that we were ashore in the summer at RAF airfields that were near civilised towns, which was a very strange thing to happen to one in the Fleet Air Arm, because we had no naval air stations anywhere near civilisation. We were in Norfolk and at Thorney Island, and we did night mine laying, night torpedo work, night reconnaissance work, anywhere from the Channel Islands, Cherbourg, Le Havre. We had a night torpedo attack off Dunkirk and the Frisian Islands, the Dutch islands, not so much around there, far more in the channel. It was very well organised by the RAF. We were very well looked after, and I think we didn't do anything very spectacular, and I think the apart from one night torpedo attack on a German convoy off Dunkirk, which only had 2 merchant ships, but they were escorted by over 20 flak ships, which was the biggest and best firework display I have ever seen. And one of our pilots succeeded in sinking one very small flak ship and was told off afterwards for wasting a torpedo on such a small target, but these things are wont to happen. We then went back to the Fleet Arm. Actually, I noticed that we went to the RAF station at Ballykelly for just over 2 weeks, and then embarked in HMS Archer, one of the very first escort carriers ever built. I think the ship was designed and built by Harry Tate, but she was a very, very happy, efficient ship. The engines were prone to break down, and it is hard to believe that during wartime this particular carrier was taken out of service and broken up, and the parts of it used on other ships, because it broke down so often. But the flight deck was supported on poles. It was not an integral hull ship at all, but we had a splendid captain and a first-class crew on board. We achieved, one of the pilots in the squadron, Sub-Lieutenant Harry Horrocks, achieved the first sinking of a U-boat using rocket projectiles, 819 Squadron, from the Archer. We escorted the first convoy back, I think this was May 43, from, we were in Argentia and picked it up, I think it was out of Halifax, back to England without losing a single ship. It was the first convoy for many, many, many months that has achieved that, which was entirely due to the escort carriers having closed the gap in the middle of the Atlantic to the work that the RAF Coastal Command was doing with their long-range aircraft, which was incredibly tedious but wonderfully done, and the fact that by this time we had frigates formed into escort groups under people like Captain Walker, etc., in which convoys could be properly cared for, and that was the turning point in the Battle of the Atlantic, without a shadow of doubt. Harry Horrocks was unfortunately killed later on when a Barracuda he was flying just fell to pieces, as that aircraft did to other people as well. When we left the Archer, we joined HMS Activity, which was a British-built escort carrier, and which did valuable convoy work They took a, just after I left, they took a convoy out to Gibraltar and then went on Russian convoys as well. And I came ashore to the Naval Air Station at Arbroath, to the signal school, became an air signal officer and went back up to my old stamping ground of Hatstone in the Orkneys to be air signal officer up there. Until just after VE Day, when I went down to the School of Naval Air Warfare at St. Merin to learn all about modern naval air warfare, with the idea of going out to the Pacific as a spare squadron commander, as they had then, just to follow the fleet train and take over in the event of unforeseen accidents. But by the time I was ready to go out to Australia, the war had finished.
We sometimes get asked at our museum by researchers who are researching the effects of war on the mentality or mental stability of people who've been through it, and the current fashion that there is for counselling. Did you feel that you needed counselling, or any of your comrades, when the war came to an end?
I did see a couple of unfortunate people for whom things did become too much, but personally, I hate to say this, but it's very true of myself and a number of my contemporaries. All the counselling that we were getting came out of a bottle or a beer pull, and I think that accounted for a number of people starting, well, they already were drinking too much, but carrying on drinking too much as a release. But counselling, no. It hadn't been invented, but the need to see a psychiatrist or a shrink or anything of that sort never cropped up.
Where and when were the couple of people who were under pressure in that way?
One was in the Devonshire, and he was one of the paymaster sub lieutenants on board, and he came up to me late at night and asked if I thought he was any use, because nobody else seemed to find him any use, and he was going to throw himself overboard. And fortunately, I managed to talk to him and get a message to one of the doctors who came and took over from him.
But that doesn't sound like the pressure of combat.
That was war stress, certainly. That was actually on the way to Russia in one of the early convoys, I think. And then there was...
But he wasn't under... It wasn't because he was constantly under fire.
No. No, it was just... I think it was just the stress of being on board and constantly on the alert. Going to action stations from time to time. But, no, that was not combat.
And the second one, you're saying?
Well, I know a swordfish pilot who reported himself to his commanding officer and said that he couldn't carry on. But we had the hospital at Barrow Gurney housed one or two Fleet Air Arm people to whom that happened.
When was the second case? What stage in the war was that?
I would say that was somewhere about 42, 43.
So on the escort carriers?
Yes, he was, to this particular chap.
Had he been through any particular...
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. He'd been... he was in Swordfish and had been flying in Swordfish actively for at least 3 years without a rest.
So it was generally the wear and tear of stress on a day-to-day basis rather than some particular warlike crisis.
Yes, it didn't happen under fire, because an awful lot of the time in Swordfish you spent on patrol, which was just being bloody cold and bored stiff. But it all mounted up. There was always the fact, of course, of operating from a deck, because every time, every takeoff and every landing could be a source of loss. We did lose one aircraft purely due to rough weather from the Archer, landing on in rough weather, and very simply, as he was about to touch down, the ship moved out from under him and he went over the side. It was purely due to rough weather and nothing else.
Did you ever get recurrent nightmares about the war afterwards?
No.
Or have your brother officers complain about that, such a thing?
No.
Another thing that we sometimes get asked about in our department is about the effect on families of returning servicemen who've been in war. Did you ever come across that families suffered because of their husbands and fathers having been in a war?
I can't really say that I did. I remained a confirmed bachelor until long after the war, and I always, believe it or not, I only made out a will about 5 years ago, because I found it became rather a superstition with me, because I found that every one of my colleagues, this was during the war, anyone I ever knew who had made out a will always seemed to bring it into use almost immediately, and so I said I won't make one. I've been finally talked into it. I've now made one out. Same with insuring oneself. The premium was just ridiculously high. I never carried any insurance. And then after the war, the Fleet Air Arm, I shouldn't think you've got this on record in the museum, but the Fleet Air Arm introduced their own insurance thing, and you could pay for 1 year's insurance, and then maybe if you got a non-flying job or you decided not to take it out, you didn't do it for the next year, and then you could immediately pick it up again and just do it by the year instead of successive payments that mounted up. Of course, the payment that you made was not redeemable or anything like that, but it was a very, very low premium.
So it was a life insurance scheme?
Yes.
What was your attitude towards the enemy during the war?
I wasn't fond of them. I was never fond of the Germans. I'm still not fond of the Germans. And I detest the Japanese.
What had really moulded your opinion, do you think, towards the Germans?
I never met one that wasn't arrogant or rude. That's not strictly true. I do have a German friend, but as he's the only German I ever met who had a sense of humour, out of all the ones I have met.